So welcome back again to Anger, Sadness, and Envy, the Rampancy.net podcast. I'm Narcogen.
And I'm Blackstar from Blackstar Productions.
And joining us again is number one Bungie fan, Miguel Freewell Chavez.
Hi, how are you, Mig?
Hey there, guys. Glad to be with you again.
Thanks for
Feels
coming,
like it was
man.
Only minutes ago.
I know.
That's because it was.
Time goes by
Like with the Bungie podcast, who knows how many weeks or months it will be before anybody hears this.
Nope.
This is actually February of 2009.
We're already dreaming in digital.
Okay.
Right.
And we're going to talk about that. Now, this is not going to be the last episode of the podcast. At least we don't intend it to be. We're going to embark on some special topic episodes after this. But this is the last level of Halo 3. This is Halo. And our nostalgia trip really starts at the end of the last level where the Chief...
Right. You can't appreciate all of it unless you've played the first game.
True.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a big thing because there are people who this is the first one that they have played. So there's a whole element of appreciation and nostalgia that they won't have or won't be privy to. And
yeah, that explains the zero punctuation review, doesn't it?
That explains a lot of zero punctuation reviews. But yeah, as far as a whole, that there is a dynamic and there's a character development that has crescendoed on this. And, you know, I mean, as they do in the lead-in text for this thing, full circle. And that's what Bungie's done. They're big on coming back to the beginning.
Right. So it really started in the last level where Cortana's rescued, and she repeats her line from Halo 1. She says, you know, keep your head down.
There's two of us in here now.
In a completely different tone, of course, from the
very
delivery
sexy,
in the first
vampy
game.
Voice.
Vampy?
Really?
Really?
Vampy.
To be honest, I always took it as more of slightly exhausted because she's exasperated from her experience. But
I don't know. I see her like slipping her nightie off.
I never thought it was vampy, but I mean, and this is no less creepy an interpretation. But I would say whenever I heard that, it sounded like your girlfriend telling you she's pregnant. that's what I not, think not of that, every time I hear that line.
Really,
that is creepy.
it's like, be careful. There's two of us in here.
Yeah, but the tone that she gives it certainly doesn't lend it. Maybe by thinking the line out of context.
Keep waiting for Cortana to send the Chief out for ice cream and pickles. You know?
she's got a craving for more databases to hack.
Oh, we don't want to talk about Cortana's cravings. I don't think.
No. So
all right. Well, anyway, we've already played through this level co-op and recorded a film about 28 minutes long. On normal difficulty, and we're going to cue this film up now and watch it. So let's hit play on my mark. 3, 2, 1, mark.
We are aboard. Humans and elites.
All right, so you have to say one of the...
This is our fight.
One of the prettier cutscenes in the game. With these
Johnson,
beautiful vistas.
Yes, ma'am. I'll land
above
the core.
You think the perspective here? It's an interesting shot. I mean, you look up, it's blue skies, and now you look down, and it's this purple.
Red. Yeah.
You know.
Oh, and there's the dashboard Madonna Cortana again. The front seat of the Pelican. Almost like, why would they have this thing there? It's like, just in case you need to put a smart AI on the dashboard of a Pelican.
Oh, I thought she was acting like the throttle. You kind of grab her and yank her back.
You can tell Meg is hit 40.
Great. And there are some great shots here, actually, that I wish I could take screenshots of. But there's that one shot there where you're going over the surface of the Pelican is flying over the surface of the halo, and you get
that's
to see
another,
this
that's another backdrop.
Yeah, yeah, it's another backdrop, but it's a nice one. And
it is.
Every time I take a picture, a screenshot of that, I actually get the Pelican in a little black square with a background from another part of the cutscene.
Uh-huh.
Really?
Yeah.
It's a render mistake?
Yeah, there's some errors like that. Okay, and look, we got to talk about it. Why can no one land a Pelican? I mean, how many times do we actually see a Pelican
it's
land
a design
as opposed
flaw.
To crashes?
Or as Microsoft would say, it's a feature. The problem with the Pelicans, I think, is that the original design from Halo 1 didn't have any wheels and had a very, very small base.
But this one does.
It does. It has gantries that come down only if you use them right. And I don't think the Chief's piloting skills or the Pelicans he gets are in perfect operating condition.
Or is it just a nostalgia thing? Because, right, for instance, we haven't had a snow level so far in Halo 3, right? Both of the previous Halo games have at least one snow level outdoor.
No, wasn't there a snow
Not in Halo 3, no.
No, it's you're right. Just,
if I can just interrupt real quick, this is... Yep. I just want to call attention to that in all of the game... this was the only time that you really get an in-game moment where it talks about the Easter eggs, about the terminals. It kind of was an interesting...
Oh, where Cortana mentions, you know, how many of these things have you found.
Yep.
Yeah, like it's the only moment when there's any sort of recognition that the Chief had kind of strayed beyond the standard script, I guess, you know.
And yeah, and then also the mention there of where are you going and about the terminals. Right. You're right. That is interesting. Maybe it's just that, given that you've been without Cortana,
right? There's no Cortana.
Nearly all of this game they wanted to give her as much as possible to say. So she comments on everything. She comments a little bit later on the fact that Guilty Spark is there and that you didn't mention that he was there because, of course, the Chief hardly ever talks. She remarks on the skull. She remarks on going to the terminal.
Yeah.
So there's always something for her to interact with you regarding, and she uses that to get caught up to speed, so to speak.
One interesting point, the first time I actually played through this, I actually ran into not only the terminal and the skull the first time, the first run-through on this, level. It wasn't until the last level did I actually run into them, because when I was when I ran around those corners, that was actually where I thought I was supposed to go. Because the drop off that was there, I was like, I think I'm going
to
hurt myself. So I turned to my right, and sure enough, there's the entryway and the door and the gantry, and I saw all these levels that looked like original Halo 1 designs, but with updated skins and updated looks. Right. And I'm like, oh, this is great! And wait, there's a room with a drop off pit, and there's this terminal. Oh, this is terminals. Oh, neat. And it was such a treasure to find it. But I can't believe I went through all the levels without finding one
now. I had the opposite problem. I was playing through levels like Crow's Nest and then Floodgate and wondering, where were all the terminals? Because
where they put them?
Well, because remember, I was one of the people who was of the opinion that the Ark was the installation on Earth, that this portal that opened up, you know, that this, and it's still my opinion that they made that up. I mean, that between the end of Halo 3, between the end of Halo 2 and the beginning of Halo 3, that they changed it. I think they had intended originally, if they had been able to finish Halo 2, that was going to be the Ark. The Ark was going to be on Earth, and therefore it would make sense for it to have Forerunner objects. There should be four other Forerunner objects on Earth, and those would be terminals. So I was still thinking we were going to find them, maybe somewhere on the, you know, in Africa, and if not outside somewhere, then we would be going down into this thing, and they would be there. So I was running through this thing, wondering where are the terminals, and then all of a sudden, oops, we're leaving Earth again. Yeah. Where I was not one of those people who was. I was not one of the people who were bothered that Halo 2 did not center on Earth more. I was not. But I was kind of thrown for a loop when they left it again, because I didn't necessarily expect that. And again, I didn't mind it, because that level, the Ark, turned out to be my favorite level in the game. So it ceased to bother me at that point.
Well, that was the equivalent of Sidewinder, wasn't it?
Yeah, and then, of course, they give you a terminal pretty early in that level, so you don't, you know.
Well, yeah,
so
you find.
Like, oh, okay,
I
get it. The Ark is somewhere else, and that's where all the terminals are. Okay, no problem.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, Miguel. As far as playing through this one though, your first run, did you end up running into the terminals at all, or were you just, you know?
I think I hit the first one, and then I didn't find the other. I think the other ones, like the second, third, whatever, I think they got harder to find. You had to jump across areas that weren't obvious.
Yeah, I think
they weren't directly in your path.
Right, you had to really be in explore mode.
I was trying to find them. I think the only one that I didn't find on my own that I had to go looking for somebody to mention where it was the one on the Covenant, the one that's on the tower that you don't have to land on. You don't have to go in. You just kind of pass it on the area of salt.
That
one, I had no idea that was there, and I had to read somebody's description before I knew to look for that one.
Yeah, I have to say that's where I have to thank the community, because I really I knew I wasn't going to get a satisfactory experience of it, playing it. So when folks kind of compiled it all into one story, I really got to enjoy it then, because then I could see the progression of the librarian and
I got to admit that is a disappointment. Maybe I'll mention that at the end, but it is kind of too bad that accessing a terminal breaks the films. I mean, it's great that they have terminals in the game, and it's great that they have film playback, and it's just a shame that one breaks the other.
Yeah, especially if you're going to want to share them, you know, if you have them in a particular film, you can't give them to someone else without them going wonky. Yeah. We'll definitely have to have an entire terminal podcast, or even several, to cover the whole range of those.
Okay.
This particular level, though, Mig, I mean, this was, you know, definitely the same control room from Halo 1.
Reminiscent of Halo 1, yeah. Oh,
completely.
So
complete nostalgia mode at this point. We're going up the pyramid. It's the snow level. It's back to assault on the control room.
Then it was elites, and now it's, or rather, it's Covenant back then. And now
it's now it's Flood. Well, Flood, you got two betrayals back.
So this is a little bit of that. It's like fighting your way down through the.
But
even that pyramid area, even in Two Betrayals, that's Covenant.
You don't
get the Flood until later.
Right. But the strange thing, and what I have to say, I was slightly disappointed, though, because I was expecting it, because this was Assault in the Control Room again, where you had to fight your way up and fight your way down, and you only got the fight up on this one. On the way down, you go to the right, and you just keep on going. It's a chase. It becomes the Maw at that point.
Was it? Yeah, sure.
And you're running out of there.
You like these
will be my anger
much?
Moment.
You really needed to fight your way down?
No, but I just thought it would. Well, now you have the Sentinels. Now you have the.
Well, two or three way battles are also a Bungie hallmark.
Yes, exactly.
It's from all the other games.
It's something they put in all their things. So to have that too, to have the fight down as well as that was another motif that they use a lot. I just was surprised it wasn't in this one. It was kind of disappointed it wasn't there.
Okay, now here's something I think, Blackstar, that you brought up before. Where are these Flood dispersal pods coming from?
I was curious as to. They seem to be the Covenant version of ODST drop pods.
But literally, where are they coming from? High Charity has crashed. We've apparently blown it up. Is this just pieces of it falling back down to the Halo, or what?
And dare I say, how are they even targeted to such a degree?
What's the guidance system?
Considering the first Halo game, it took you forever and a day to find where the control room even was. What do you know? He knows where it is right off at the mark, and he's literally heading you off as you're going up the ramp.
Okay, but we've been guided here by Guilty Spark, who wants us to set off the ring. So it does make sense.
Open up! Ghost is clear.
Not for long. I'm tracking additional dispersal pods. They'll be hitting any minute.
Chief, Arbiter, let's move.
Is this information that Gravemind got from Guilty Spark somehow, or from the original Halo design? Because this is supposed to be the replacement, if I'm correct, a replacement for Installation 04. So if that being the case, then the layout would be the same or similar. But,
well, it is pretty similar.
Yeah, there are nuances and differences. I mean, you know, where doors are and other elements in this as well. But yeah, it's just that it's the timing. And of course, again, it falls under this is a game. So they have to have these kind of things. It just would have been nice to have either some kind of explanation or to have Gravemind have an example of something else he has in his arsenal besides High Charity. He's got something, other tricks up his sleeves.
I think explanations are overrated in this case. Well, I always thought it's...
Maybe not explanations, but reasons.
I always thought Guilty Spark as kind of like a slarty Bartfest of Halo 3 here. It's like, you know, he's redoing the Halo, but he's doing it all in Fjords because he likes them. You know, that's why. So that's why it's the same control room. It's in a snowy area. I would have liked an area. I would have liked a discussion about, because they bring this up. They bring this up in the second level of the first game about the environment, about the weather, about why it is the way it is, and we're going to see illustrated clearly at the end of this level The fact that this is an entirely artificial environment. You know, we see these right. metal mountains that, you know, it's like a model. It's all made out of metal and styrofoam, and none of this mm-hmm. stuff that looks natural it's, really is.
It's like Wachusett. That's not real snow.
But it's all still empty. It contains flood. It's a prison for flood. But what else is it for? Were people supposed to live on this? Was this a giant zoo?
There are no rugs.
What was it, you know, what was it for? Why are the areas around places where flood are stored or where control rooms are usually covered with snow? Why is that? Mm. Do flood hate the cold?
Maybe it's a cooling system for their particular technology.
I always figured that it's coincidence that, you know, we're landing on the Halo Ring this early in the incarnation, and I would figure of all the types of weather, the easiest one first is just snow, is coldness, because, you know, you're out in space. So to me, I imagine all of the ring is covered in snow until it gets itself sorted out, and that's when vegetation and all that stuff kind of kicks in.
Oh, that's an interesting point.
Yeah.
Hold your fire! Hey, watch! Rah! Hold your fire!
Oh, undead Johnson. Okay, so now we're coming up to Johnson's big moment here, right? Johnson and Guilty Spark. Spark wants to wait a couple of days to set off the ring, and Johnson says,
"We don't have time for that." Make me
chief. And
this will be my sadness moment for later.
Oh, really? You think this doesn't work?
Just sadness as a way of saying embarrassment for the idiocy of Guilty Spark for assuming that a bunch of soldiers are actually going to wait.
Oh, hello. Wonderful news. The installation is almost complete.
Terrific.
Yes, isn't it? I have begun my simulations. No promises, but initial results indicate this facility should be ready to fire in just a few more days.
We don't have a few more days.
But a premature firing will destroy the Ark.
Deal with it.
We'll destroy this installation. Unacceptable! Absolutely unacceptable! Protocol dictates action! I see now that helping you was wrong! You are the child of my makers! Inheritor of all they left behind! You are Forerunner! But this ring is mine!
Oh, you think upon his character. He should have been smarter to realize that the urgency of the situation.
Right.
Well, actually, let's take it off. I'm actually not sure what the urgency in the situation really is.
Well, the other question is urgency for who?
Can the flood get through those doors? Can they get in?
Eventually, I would assume so.
I suppose so, but I would say...
You get the impression from Halo 1, because there were damaged and broken doors that you come back to that the flood get through in Halo 1 when you were leaving. So.
True, but maybe I would have appreciated a reminder here, because I have to admit, when Johnson says we don't have a few days, I was wondering myself, gee, why not? You know, that's a bunch of pretty thick doors. You could at least.
I'm thinking
thought,
more in terms of Gravemind and his deviousness and all that. Like, what would he have up his sleeve?
He can,
in those few days to kind of plot and plan.
I don't know. So, I think if the imminent danger is flood getting in those doors behind you, I at least could have thought, well, you could put off firing until there's mm-hmm. more of an imminent threat. Mm-hmm. Especially given, and again, you may be saying it's disappointing that Guilty Spark doesn't consider that fact. What disappoints me is that all we seem to be achieving here by setting off this ring is the destruction of the flood that is here. We don't necessarily know that this is all the flood there is.
Nope.
And Guilty right. Spark tells us that not only are we going to destroy this new ring,
but potentially damage or destroy the
but
Ark.
But very likely, yeah, destroy the Ark along with the Forge, which means that there will be no more replacement rings. So theoretically now, this system, which has existed for millennia and is the only known method of pushing the Flood back once it starts its expansionist mode, is right. now defunct. It doesn't work. If there's even one infection form left anywhere...
We're going to be doing this all over again.
Then people are in serious trouble. But they're willing to go ahead. He's willing to go ahead and do that. And I'm still not really sure if
see,
there
that
are...
to me is again is a very much like we are talking about soldiers, Marines. You know, they're the cliche is they're not thinking that far ahead. You know,
oh, okay.
That's where I see Guilty Spark's, you know, supposed, you know, massive intelligence failing him because,
maybe he's just so used to taking a long view that he doesn't take into account that they're not.
Right. Yeah, he does sit in this weird position where he's a super intelligent being, but he does act like a bit of a buffoon. You know,
Here's a question I have. Is it actual massive intelligence he has, or is it simply massive knowledge? Because his particular character and dynamics, you mentioned before that there are certain things that he doesn't know about the installation by design, and his personality has certain quirks like the other monitor that you saw before in it. So the question you got to ask yourself, is it because he is super smart, or is it because he just has a super big library full of encyclopedias?
I remember his little speech in the first Halo game where he says, you know, oh, all this knowledge and... all this information and I guess librarian-like, one might say. Yeah, I guess that's where I mistook, you know, not just as this rabid need to store information, but I thought he was actually processing it and, like, you know, trying to figure out man. And I thought that was going to play in later with maybe he would be smart enough to fool the chief and, you know, pick up on those sort of things, the human foibles and all that he would have gained from all that knowledge. But
almost like a Cortana.
Like I said, now he comes off nemesis. Like he comes off like a real, you know, he's just this kind of guy that,
you know what, I don't think he ever intentionally deceived the chief. I mean, even when Cortana comes around and says, you know, what he's been doing.
Yeah, he always said protocol dictates
like,
action.
Well, gee, it's like, didn't you know that? I said, I thought you knew what was going on.
You're the reclaimer. How can you not know?
Yeah, and at the end of the game, when he talks about the information, he says what? He says, I will enjoy every moment of its categorization.
He's not his comprehension, not its usage.
Right. He's a taxidermist. Yeah. He may not even be comprehending the information. He's filing it.
He's really excited about the Dewey Decimal System.
Right.
So yeah, so he's basically the ultimate in digital library technology. But yeah, I don't see him as a nemesis for Cortana. Cortana is definitely far more thoughtful and devious, and, you know, she's the penetration program. She's the one that can infiltrate and use this stuff. There were some elements in the story of her doing that, but yeah, I definitely didn't see Guilty in that. And to be honest, Guilty's death, I felt bad. Okay. I felt more sad for Guilty's death than
that's the next thing to
Johnson's,
ask. Again, then,
I hate to say it.
In the library, I think everybody eventually took a shot at him.
Yeah.
Because the level itself was so frustrating, and his commentary just made it that much more unbearable.
Stop being human.
Yeah, and of course his reaction was funny, which just provokes you to do it some more, you know.
Yes.
And since he's indestructible, you can't hurt him. The only thing, of course, is that, you know, it's a terrible level to be wasting ammunition on.
Very much so.
But I think Bungie interpreted that as people would like to have a chance to resolve
finally,
this.
Oh yeah. Well,
and
he's
so
hated
Spark,
by so many.
Spark provokes you into killing him, but did you really want to? I mean, did you feel it was necessary to do this?
No. And I felt bad that Johnson ended up getting killed. To be honest, I always thought Johnson was one of the ones that was actually going to make it all the way through. I really, really did. I didn't quite see Johnson
and maybe
being
not
sacrificed.
The chief. You figure maybe the game would end with Johnson alive and the chief dead.
Not only that, I almost anticipated that the Arbiter would actually sacrifice himself, to tell you the truth. I kind of got the impression that because of all the other Arbiters before him, all the ones that were used and consumed in their time, I got the impression that the Arbiter was going to
die. But that means that the Arbiter that you played is not special in the annals of arbitrage, whatever you want to call it.
Arbiter history, you mean?
I think we talked about this before. I do think that they, for the most part, the ending comes off about as well as any ending possibly could. What about you, Mig? The very ending with the Arbiter and the Chief in the final scene. But just at this point, though, did you want a chance to shoot Spark, or would you have been just as happy if that ended somehow in another way that you didn't have to kill him?
I had no urge. I didn't see him as a villain, really. Just like I said, he seems to be so bereft of any sort of subtleties and deep thought. So he really was just someone who was just in the way if he was preventing me from doing something. But I had no feeling like that this guy, look what he's put me through, for all this time. I need to kill him. You know, he's just an AI that had a mission and misguided or whatever. You know, and
he was
and,
doing his job.
Was, you know,
it's
with
almost
this
as if
Faye voice and if he was programmed that way, is very smart to make him this sort of. Like unassuming. Imagine the same character, but with a really deep, Darth Vader-like voice or something. It would have been a different kind of experience. You know, it would have elicited a different kind of reaction, that I think. But instead, he was like this kind of fake character. You know, so
yeah, they were trying to make him friendly and happy to a certain point, but it came off after so long of being alone that he was more sickly scary.
There's nothing terribly menacing about him. In fact, I think I don't think it's the fault of the voice actor.
Well, until he starts sending billions of sentinels after you.
But in the first Halo, when he says, "Save his head, dispose of the rest."
Yeah.
Even that's I don't know that didn't quite come off. I didn't really.
Really?
I'm not even sure how a sentinel would have severed his head and kept it. They don't even really have...
Well, they've got tools and lasers and beams and all kinds of stuff. I'm sure they'll figure out a way.
Okay.
But, as far as him as a character, though, I tend to like him. I really liked him from the first game. There wasn't so much of him in the second.
And you get more help from him in this game.
Yes.
Really than you get from him in any of the others, aside from being teleported around. You end up helping him. In the first game, really, he wants to eliminate the Flood and he wants to retrieve the Index, and you help him do that. And in this game, starting with the Ark, you've got your objectives, and he pretty much helps you. And he says every once in a while, we ought to go this, we ought to go do that. And Johnson,
it intersects very well,
Chief all say, no, we've got, we're not going to do that. We're not going to worry about firing the ring yet. First, we have to get the truth first. And
right.
He assists. He never refuses to help. He always goes along, and then for his trouble, he gets popped.
Right, and his double cross, or whatever you would want to call it, is a very short part. You know, it just happens right in that room, and then it's over and done with.
Right away. Yeah.
Whereas Grave Mines is lasts for a full a run through with the Flood, so
and I do have to wonder, and I wondered this at the end of Halo 2, which was that I didn't see any way for the game to end other than with firing a ring.
Right.
That, you'd spent two games trying to stop them, and you were gonna end up having to fire one, and if not, there was gonna have to be a question of, well, if the Forerunners found no way to coexist with the Flood, that they had to destroy them. The question was going to be the offer that Gravemind made. What was it really? What did Gravemind want that humanity could give him?
I think it also might have been a point where Bungie said after 10 years, if we don't fire off one of these things, we're going to get lynched. Simple as that.
I don't know.
If we don't show them what happens when you do this thing,
They do kind of address that in the terminals, you know, where the AI that they built to defeat the Flood.
But that was only for those who read them. Only for those who read them. There are going to be a whole lot of people that play this game that never, ever see or touch a terminal.
And then eventually it changes its mind and said, oops, you know, I made a mistake. And sorry, my bad. It's helping you through all this game, invisibly. Okay.
But anyway, as far as deaths go, I mean, I think Mig touched on something where he didn't think that Johnson's death quite worked. I was wondering if he might elaborate on that, because I was actually hurt more by Guilty's death than Johnson's. I still felt very, very bad for Johnson. I wish his character didn't actually die. I did think that his death scene was, in fact, better than Key's, though, in this game. But you didn't think that it worked very well, did you, Mig?
No, I just don't see. I mean, I think if he had just simply died and been a good soldier about it, I think that would have resonated better with me than him dying and then having to talk about Cortana and, you know, and don't let her go. That kind of removed me completely from, you know, I just don't see Johnson as this sort of
sentimentalist.
As this emotional, caring person. You know, even when he picked up Keys, it was a little bit like I really wasn't getting. I thought the whole point was that, you know, there are all these soldiers dying around him throughout the game. He never bothers just to cradle the one of them. And, you know, of all the people out there, you know, it's the young soldiers that are, of course, I think more to be, you know.
The only opportunity he gets to show such sympathy, actually, he takes the kid to task, right? He's. In the beginning of, Metropolis in Halo 2, he sees that soldier who says, you know, hey, we've got to get out of here. And he says, what, are you hit? You know, so he shows very little sympathy there. You're right, I have a feeling that, and it maybe it was Joe Staten doing this, but I have a feeling that both of those scenes, Keyes' death scene in Halo 3 and Johnson's, were both written as if the two had a relationship, even if we never actually saw it.
I get because that impression too.
If you take that into account, then both of those scenes, they may or may not work for you, but they make sense.
Yeah, they certainly
you're
impact
right.
more.
Yeah, if it fits more along with their character than if that was the case. You know, this was his one true emotional connection with another human being, and it was going to end as a suicide pact, but even that gets robbed. Then sure, then it has a more of an emotional impact.
Not only that, I think it explains her hesitation, because being a military person, if they actually did have an emotional bond with it, okay, that would explain why she would want to stop, because she actually felt something for him. For if they had absolutely no feeling or no relationship whatsoever, she should have just pulled the trigger, boom, boom.
Right.
How much long does it take to pull the trigger twice?
Well, you know.
So, yeah, that was my only problem
with that. The only answer to that is that if that didn't happen, you wouldn't have a game.
Exactly. Well, yeah, but the thing is
but
that
it also,
if they kept that emotional in there, though, if they had kept that character and that dynamic where they had a relationship, though, that would have explained it, so they would have given me a reason.
I think it's too much distraction. Again, it's one of those things that if you assume that it's there, it explains a lot of things, but it doesn't take up any of your time and attention.
Yeah, but it would have taken up too much.
Let's not ignore what I consider to be like one of the key cinematics in the ending here.
Okay, so we're now watching the chief hanging upside down in the cargo bay of the
Chief's
frigate.
Made it.
Yep.
They're blasting off.
You get to see
well done.
Oh, it's epic. It's epic. This is the money shot right here.
Got it, Chief. Jump. Floor it right into the hangar.
will make it.
It's been an honor serving with you, John.
Well, graphically, I think it is. Yeah. Graphically, I think it is. But I would say, from an emotional perspective, the money is here. It is this shot. The chief, I mean, this is the first time we've ever seen him sit down.
Oh, and put his head down, yeah.
He sits down, and again, he's only got his body to emote with. He puts his head back, and Cortana uses his name for the first time. And for me, that
his first
scene,
name, yeah.
That scene works much better and says volumes more than the rescue scene does for
I
their relationship.
I think the emotionality is correct for that one, but I think the visuals, I think the absolute crescendo of Bungie's eye candy design was packed into that. And I swear, there were people the world over, myself included, that had to change their underwear after
right.
that one.
But the point of the shot is, I mean, they basically put everything they could into this scene. You've got the ship, you've got the ring,
you've got the ark, you've got the forge,
you've got all these things going on.
And that lovely stand-up scene with Cortana.
Right, but in the middle of it, you've got these two, and the dominant visual elements there are the chief and Cortana facing each other, and it's like, all of this stuff might be epic eye candy, but the important thing is here.
Yeah.
These two characters. Yeah. And that's the only thing that makes sense of what happens with Johnson. You're right. It is weird. Johnson says these things about don't ever let you go. And it's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, exactly.
Man?
What are you?
It's not only.
Did I miss something?
Yeah. It's like, even if the chief and Cortana did have some kind of strange, unsubstantiated, relationship, how would Johnson know about it? Do they talk about it in the shower or something? I don't know.
Right.
To be honest, though, in comparing those two moments where you like the one where John relaxes his head back and he does that sigh.
I think it's perfect. That's what it is. I mean, it's perfect. I can hardly find anything wrong about it. Whereas,
to be honest, why I like the other one more, not only just because I'm a visual person and whatnot, because that one says it without saying it. That one, it just visually just completely nails it where no one says a word and they don't have to. Get it.
Okay.
Music helps too.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. Marty's always sets the mood, but that's why I like that other one better.
I would say the other scene would also work without, even if Jen didn't have that line there, it's been an honor serving with you, John. That scene would still work. I don't think the line hurts it.
Oh, no, not at all. I'm just saying that I like the other one more so because of what it showed. It showed me, it didn't tell me.
But I like it, though, because the strange thing is here is that the only one who seems to be coming close to explicitly talking about a romantic relationship is Johnson with this kind of corny, don't ever let her go. Like, my girlfriend just died. Don't lose yours, too. You know, don't ever reformat that flash drive.
Exactly.
keep it
in your pocket.
Right. But between the two of them, all you get is her. And her remark is professional. It's entirely professional. So this is a love story, but it's a love story between two soldiers, really.
Right. As far as cheesy lines go, though, which is worse? Johnson's.
Well, it's unfortunate that we can't see the Easter egg at the end of the credits, because that I think is just a continuation of that, because now you get to see a little bit more of that, you know. And it's again another nod to the fans, because it harkens back to Halo 1.
Yeah, I wish we had random access in the menu to those things once they were unlocked, rather than having to play through the level on Legendary and then go through the credits as well. Actually, can we download that from somewhere and watch
through,
it?
It's HBO has it all.
Oh, we don't have to, because with a little foresight, I actually decided to grab both the Legendary and the bonus footage, so we can actually play through them here. Unfortunately, Mig will not be able to partake as well.
That's okay. It's pretty much seared in the back of my brain anyway. So.
Okay, but we're skipping the hood. We're skipping the final cutscene.
Well,
that
part we don't get a chance to see. But even so, I have to say, out of all the scenes though, I was not a big fan of that one.
Oh, really?
Personally,
no. Okay. Now, see, I disagree. I thought that
it was too soon.
When
it was way too soon.
When I say things like they ended this game as well as they could be expected to end it, as well as anybody could expect.
The very end, yes.
I'm talking about that cutscene in particular because there's the big question is always we're going to be, is the chief going to live through this or not? And I thought the way they handled this in this game was brilliant. They got to have their cake and eat it too.
Yeah.
He's not dead, but he doesn't return. The chief can't come back retired, retire, get fat and balding, and sit in front of the TV. He can't do that.
Right, we don't have to think about that.
Yeah,
or we don't have to think of him dying in a blaze of glory and having to deal with some sort of schmaltzy thing there, too.
Yeah, exactly.
He just disappears into the sunset.
So you get to have the funeral. You get to see the emotional reactions of Hood and of the Arbiter. And you get to see his little epilogue too, which I also think works really, really well.
Were it so easy?
It's good. Well, not just that. I mean, that's the first part of which is his homage to the memory of the chief. And of course, it means so much more him not being there. It can't be. You know, I mean, if the two of them were there on that little island, it was like, hey, we just saved the universe. It's Miller time. Yeah. I mean, it would be comic.
Well, what's funny on that particular scene with the pictures, though, is that there's not one of the chief. He had to scratch in 117 in there because nobody had a picture of the chief to hang up on the memorial. Personally, I thought it was a little too soon to memorials. You didn't really see anything, go on as far as Earth. So you're not quite sure about the timetable that went from the time that the ship arrived.
I don't care about that.
What I think makes up for it, if I can go a little bit off topic, was the Halo 3 ad campaign with that giant diorama of the Master Chief in that battle. I don't know if you recall.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I wasn't a huge fan of that. I think I never really integrated.
I never really integrated those
into my perception of the Haloverse, really.
Well, I think what they tried to do was
to
make
me
it more
were
real.
Like a memorial that was that just resonated with me so well, especially when they never explicitly talked about what happens at the end, but you can tell that obviously the chief makes his way out of it. You know, they were kind of hinting that, oh yes, this is a big battle and this guy died and that guy died and this guy was a witness to it. And then they would always kind of pan the camera around up to the chief, and then the chief would lift his head and you'd see that in his hand he had a plasma nade, and you said, yeah, he's going to do one of his traits. You know, and again, anytime we say us. Which is, I guess, another reason why it pumps us up, because it says, man, I'm going to be in there and I'm going to be kicking ass.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this brute thinks he's got me, but actually I'm going to get him. And that I thought that was a really, I don't know how,
or,
you know,
or,
the,
or
the,
I'm gonna
the,
die
like,
and
when
respond.
You read about it, when you read about the whole process, it seems like, you know, these are big endeavors. You know, this ad company obviously is not sitting in there with the guys with Bungie. So for it to intersect as well as it did, in my opinion, is just such a welcome thing, you know, where both these kind of end cutscenes and that kind of an ad, I think, both hit the same emotional beat, not getting too corny or not being too stilted. And it was just very powerful. I had to really give high marks for the ad.
Yeah,
I think in some ways it's another... It's another instance of art crossing with commerce, and you only do it if you had that much money to sink into something like this. You know, you're never going to see that in some sort of indie, you know, basement type of thing. You know, it's very hard to get that sort of right tenor of that, I guess, there. So,
well, they definitely hit the tone. It definitely resonated with a lot of people, and I would definitely agree. It certainly got me pumped up. I can't tell you how many times I watched those over and over again in anxious anticipation of actually participating. Also using, you know, real characters and getting a chance to see real actors evoke dialogue and give, you know, the even though it's a faux documentary type circumstance, but just, you know, it came across a little bit more real than just the game would by itself.
Yes.
So the emotional element was definitely brought in there more, and when you did get to the end, it definitely had more of an impact, I think. So yeah, I would definitely agree on that.
Right. I mean, because those ads came up before the game came out, so I was always confused. I said, are they giving us, or are they like giving away what the final battle is going to be?
You know,
I
wasn't hoping
sure,
they
like,
didn't.
Is this Is this, you know, and like, am I seeing like a reenactment of what we're going to be? And then, you know, and then you find out that not at all. This is actually just another great,
I never wondered that battle, because, you know? I don't think Bungie ever gives away anything that's beyond the first half of the game, which of course is why everybody felt, you know, those people who were bothered by it felt betrayed by Halo 2, because all of the ad and promotion material all pertained to what happened on Earth.
Yeah.
It was all Earth, Covenant, no Flood, all Earth, no,
all the posters,
no High
all
Charity,
the ads.
No Delta Halo, none of that stuff. So I was pretty much prepared for that, that anything that we were going to see in the promotion for Halo 3, it was going to be from the first act, whatever it was. Now, I didn't necessarily know what they were going to do, the Ark wasn't going to be on Earth, but I knew that whatever we were going to see was going to be pretty early in the game. So I was pretty sure when I saw that ad that we weren't looking at the Chief's death scene or the final battle, whatever that was, because I don't think they would have tipped their hand that way. And I think they were pretty... I think they were pretty quick. Or I think there was almost immediate speculation about, oh, this means they're going to kill the Chief.
Yeah.
because there were some ads that also had this kind of in memoriam quality. And Bungie, I think somebody from Bungie was pretty quick to point out, no, that's not like that. That's not what that means.
Yeah.
But but don't you see, though, that kind of still plays into it? Because at the end, if we remove ourselves from us being in this godlike mode, seeing everything, to everyone on Earth, the Master Chief is dead.
Yeah,
you know, he is gone, and so it does make sense that Earth is mourning him, and I don't know. I just thought that was really just very cleverly done. I really, you know, in the same way that I was looking forward to what's his name, Neil Blomkamp's, his little snippets there of what he did with
Landfall
Halo footage. Yeah, Landfall piece. It just, to me, I was just really getting pumped up and excited to see folks not just moving the game to another medium, but also, I think, successfully bringing along the right kind of tone, and they were kind of getting it. And I have to give them my hands off my hats are off to them for doing that. But again, it all starts with the cinematics here, and they were capturing it even back in Halo 2. I think there were some very key moments there where you were able to kind of get a sense of the gravitas of what's going on beyond just a simple shooter. So, and and Blackstar, you were mentioning something that was interesting. How not everyone's going to see the terminals. I always find it interesting when I find people that say I don't even bother sitting through the cutscenes. They just want to run and gun, It's just really fascinating to
no,
see
I don't.
How that occurs.
I've had that. I mean, because you mentioned before the projector, and the projector is what I use for my primary display when I'm playing Halo 3. I like to play it big as possible and as loud as possible. And every once in a while, when I have people over, if I talk to somebody and it turns out they're a bit of a gamer, because over where I live, there's not a lot of Xboxes, so not a lot of people have played the Halo games. So if I get half a chance, I will turn the lights down and I will pop Halo 3 in, and I will, start off with that game. And it's always crushing when somebody says, "Can we skip this?"
Yeah.
I want to play. Yes. Can we skip this? And I'm like, "No, man, you don't get it. You have to, you won't know why you're shooting at anything if you don't watch the cutscene."
Right.
And of course, plenty of people don't care, and they don't have to enjoy the game. And I mean, the huge popularity of the game, I think, is testament to the fact, the game is really a victim of its own popularity in that sense. It appeals to such a broad audience that you can't get agreement from any significant portion of it about what is it that makes Halo great.
No, absolutely.
I have nothing in common with MLGers. I'm much more along, the line of Claude, which is, wow, man, this stuff is hard. And, I don't play a lot of multiplayer. So the people who are like, the BR shouldn't have spread, this is completely unrealistic and takes me out of my immersion. I don't feel that way, but
it's not on your radar.
Yeah, but it's not. But what bugs me is when people say, can I skip this? I don't want to watch this little movie. And they're not even that long. It's not like this is a JRPG. There aren't a lot of 10-minute cutscenes. I've played a couple of JRPG demos that went up on Xbox Live recently, and a lot of them play out like 10 or 20 minutes of cutscene where the only gameplay is pressing green button to advance to the next bit, nothing else.
Right.
Right. Halo doesn't belong in that. So I don't know. I suppose. But what would you have rather? I mean, would you have rather they made it unskippable?
I think no. Well, it would. You know, that would be a nice little kind of Easter egg preference. You know, not allow it to be skippable, so that way you have to force your friends to have to sit through the film.
Well, you know what? Actually, some people will do that. I mean, some people will ask me, "Can you skip this?" And I'll say, "No."
Yeah, no, no, you got to sit through it. Sorry.
If they push the button, I'll be like, "Oh, wait, you did something wrong. We have to go back."
It's going to glitch now.
Yeah, it's exactly. An interesting contrast, though, that you mentioned that, yeah, the cutscenes being as important to the story and also the enjoyment of many players, though, you would prefer to have these be non-skippable, but some of the Cortana and Greymon moments, you would rather have them be skippable because that feels more of a game flow break as opposed to an interjective story.
They're integrated into the gameplay. It's frustrating to have control taken from you partially. So, I would almost rather take it away or leave it.
Yeah, so the question is, would you have felt better if they had taken all of those Cortana and Gravemind moments and simply made one more cutscene to play out a storyline to it, or would you have rather had the option?
No, guess, because it fits in the mood with what's trying to happen there. You know, Gravemind is slowly doing his thing, mm-hmm. Cortana's slowly breaking down, you know, so it has to happen in these sort of staccato moments, you know, it can't be done as a cutscene, because then that would then feel like it's too rushed or it's too pat. You know, it's got to be something where it was a clever thing for them to have done. You know, to have added those effects and the sort of extreme the depth of field effect and all that. It was just something where after I saw it the first couple of times, you know, it was like I want to kill that thing that's coming to me, you know?
They could have made it work the way the so-called perspective moments work elsewhere in the game, because there are other...
Make it third person,
there are other mini cutscenes where they take camera control away from you, but you can, with a simple button press, you can go right back to first person.
Right.
And then whatever events are playing out continue as they would. They're just not directing your camera to look at anything. Actually, again, sorry to bring it up, but Gears of War... I think also has this interesting thing where when there's something interesting to look at, they just flash the little yellow, you know, button on the screen there. And then if you want to look at it, if in other words, if you want the game to take your camera control from you, you know, because there's something you need to see, you can hit that button. And if you know what it is, because you've already seen it, you don't have to. You just, you know, the button goes away after a couple seconds and it's fine.
Be sure to tune in next week when we have a Gears of War podcast from rampancy.net.
Halo 3 just does it the other way around. Basically, they take control from you unless you want to take it back.
Yeah, Whereas Gears
lets you have the control and says, if you want to give it up, press the button.
Right. Well, QuickTime events are, you know, horrible in and of itself. But as far as the compare and contrast, though, between the two of them, I mean, the cinematics have always been, you know, great throughout all the games, even some of the weaker moments in them. But this one that we're watching at the end, though, it's funny that you mentioned, Meg, that some people didn't see them, because I had just recently on a forum had posted a link to HBO.
You have to wait through the whole credit sequence to see it at all. And then you have to have played on Legendary through the last level to see the longer one.
Yep. I had posted on a totally unrelated forum, actually, about this, because someone had played all through Legendary and was looking for the bonus one and apparently didn't see it. And he was very frustrated and annoyed. And I told him, look, you can see all the cutscenes whenever you want in high def. Just go to HBO and check them out. And he was very grateful for that. But there are, I'm sure, dozens, if not hundreds of people that may have been in the exact same situation where literally not only did they not see the extra footage after the credits because either they hit A or didn't wait, or they didn't even see the bonus Legendary stuff at the end because either a technical glitch or, again, they...
Or because they didn't play on Legendary.
Well, they could be lying. Who knows? But for people who are looking for it, who have heard about it and want to see it, didn't get a chance to for whatever reason.
Because they don't have the internet?
And who knows what his particular issue was at the time.
I don't know. For every person there is who says that they haven't seen that because they haven't watched it, there's another person who has seen it on Legendary and is convinced that everybody doesn't understand that, of course, there's going to be a Halo 5 featuring the Master Chief and Cortana, because didn't you see the Legendary cutscene?
Yeah. Yeah. Start another fight.
I don't know about you guys, but I'm pretty much putting to bed the whole, you know, to me, I'm once the ODST comes out, I'm pretty much putting tucking away my Halo, you know, fan card or whatever.
Bungie, from a business, I mean, let's get boring for just a minute, and I promise I'll stop. From a business perspective, what Bungie has achieved in the last 20 years, I think, is very, very interesting. They were a small, independent developer that self-published for the Macintosh, and they got to be fairly successful, and then had one crucial error. They had the error on the PC installer for Myth 2.
That just happened to wipe your drive.
Yeah, if you put it on the root level of your C drive and then uninstalled, you'd delete your whole hard drive. They had to do a costly...
I think you can throw Weekend Warrior in there, too, with another error.
Actually, well, yep, but not a business error, because actually, I hope I'm not getting anybody in trouble myself.
You still have
myself.
One of the video cards that came
Oh, I did.
No,
I don't have the card anymore. I think that got put in a G3 tower that got sold somewhere. But yeah, I did have that game, and I did not play it for more than 5 minutes. But that was not a business mistake because, like I said, I hope I'm not getting myself or anybody else in trouble by saying this. But apparently, at least at one point, that was one of Bungie's more financially successful games because it was bundled with those cards.
With a video card, right? But I think that says more about where they were back then. Yeah, but I think that has a lot more to say with the scope of how things were back then, and also just how rough it is as a game developer.
Oh yeah,
kind of profits you see per unit.
Yeah,
you know, and
they were trying. I mean, if you think about it, it's very ambitious. I mean, it's one thing for a developer, a small developer for an alternative platform, just trying to branch out into PC, to be so ambitious that they're going to publish their own games and deal directly with retail. It's another thing to be so ambitious to say, you know what, we're not only going to publish our own games, we're going to publish other developers' games and publish for crack.com, and we're going to license our engine. There are more Marathon engine licensees than there are Halo licensees. The only Halo licensee I know about was Wideload. But they had this costly recall, and it was shortly after that they sold about a little bit less than 20% of the company to Take-Two. When Microsoft bought them in compensation for that portion, they got the Oni and Myth franchise.
Right.
So then when Microsoft bought them, they traded back this stock that Take-Two owned, and Take-Two got Myth and Oni. They didn't do anything ever with Oni. They only licensed one sequel for Myth that was not successful at all.
I miss Oni.
So now Bungie has done it again. They have traded a franchise away for money or for their own independence.
Well, it wasn't for love.
So Microsoft proved that what they really bought Bungie for was Halo. If anybody if anybody ever believed what they said was that they bought Bungie for the people and for the atmosphere and for the creativity.
I remember, you know, the thing is that, if I can just interject there,
sure.
I remember.
Please interject.
When Microsoft, when Bungie made the announcement, and again, this kind of goes to Bungie's how they treat their fans. They actually had a private telephone conference with a couple of us Halo fans, and I was chosen among. You know, I actually was able to sit down and chat.
Nobody called me
with Max. and Matt, and I know that they couldn't say much, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that they were kind of bound by legal reasons, but they were kind of implying, says, listen, we're going into this with both eyes wide open, and I think what I was kind of getting the hint of is like, we have things in place, like, don't worry,
we have a plan.
I know that you think that us being that we're being swallowed up, but that actually we're going in and we played our cards just right, and it's really going to pay off in the end. Like if it, I think the idea was that we have an escape plan.
They had this planned all along.
And so I get the feeling that when they said that they were going to break away from Microsoft, most people said, well, how can Microsoft allow that?
Well, that never happened.
I get the feeling that when they signed whatever that they signed, they had it in there, some sort of wording that they could pull out with no, you know, really bad ramifications if they wanted to after, you know, set amount of years. I mean, maybe it was that they had to fulfill a potential trilogy of Halo games, and then they could bow out, you know, with no questions asked. So... because it really, I mean, if you think about it, I think, you know, I think this kind of goes into their, if you want to believe in their own fan, you know, like the kind of hype which I gave them, is that, you know, these guys are smart, and even, you know, even David versus the Goliath monster, which is Microsoft, they were smart enough to think far enough ahead that if they wanted to be able to pull out and become independent again, that they could without getting suckered into the sort of situations that like FASA and those other folks got into, where they kind of were swallowed up and then
or Ensemble
or Ensemble, yeah, which is a very, you find that this is a very common thing. I mean, it is what happened with the folks who were working on Myth 3. They were kind of in, and they were promised that they were going to finish the game, and then like right as it shipped, they were fired.
Yep.
You know, and it was a terrible shame, you know,
and that trademark was
some of those guys.
That trademark was kept on to develop mobile phone games after that.
Yeah, yeah, so
no more Vidocs from Ensemble. I was so looking forward to those.
I just find it really interesting about the whole breakout, you know, them becoming
You know what, actually we talked about special topic podcast. We probably ought to set aside one
for Halo Wars.
Maybe for Halo Wars if we're interested in talking about that. But just about the business deals and the history there, because they're, I mean, as secretive as Bungie is about the story, they are more secretive about the business side of their business. But if you have to look at it, it's got to be one of the most interesting stories in the industry. It's at least as interesting as John Romero, Ion Storm, Daikatana, you know, type slow motion train wrecks. This is a, you know, this is a slow motion perfect three point landing. I mean, how do you manage this? How do you go from being a plucky little Mac developer to being owned by Microsoft to being able to trade away your franchises for your independence and emerge as this thing? I mean, I think it won't be given the respect it deserves if they don't pull off the next project.
If you call it the miracle in Seattle, I'm going to smack
you.
But
that's the same position they were in. That's the same position they were in with Halo. Whereas if Halo was just going to be a little Mac PC shooter or a Mac shooter with a PC version or vice versa, then it didn't necessarily have to be perfect. But once it was going to be the system seller for the Xbox, backed by Microsoft money,
I think Bungie would take umbrage at that.
What do you mean?
I think Bungie has a sensitive spot for thinking that they needed Microsoft backing to get. I mean, I think that makes sense if you think of it in terms of Xbox.
I think it's hard. Yeah, but I think it's hard not to come to that conclusion unless you're being really sentimental about it. I mean, I
kind of see that, but I think it's a big question mark. I think it's one of those things that we'll never have an answer to, because obviously it's too late to see what would have happened if they were by themselves. But they were, it seemed, you know, like, you know, Matt's talked about it the before, how, look, that we weren't in financial straits. This wasn't something that we were forced to have to, you know, it was like done on purpose. But it is interesting to think what would have happened if Halo had come out from this plucky, independent, you know, dev, and what would have happened, you know, like, where would they have gone? You know, I mean, could the story and the excitement of the game itself been enough to have propelled them on a path? Maybe not at the same level, at the same stratosphere where they made it, but still to a point where they could be talked at the same level as, like, you know, the folks behind Orange Box, the, you know, folks behind the Gears of War, you know.
I have a tough time taking it seriously, though, when they say, because, I mean, again, in the business world, there are certain things that you have to say. Whether they're completely true or not is kind of separate from the issue. When they say we didn't have to do this, I look at it and say, well, nobody who owns a 100% private company ever sells any of it unless you have to. And you can define have to in that case, meaning that doing so is that much better than not doing so. So when they sold 19.9% to Take-Two, well, had to. What do you mean had to? Did they have a gun to their head? Were they going to go out of business otherwise? Mm-hmm.
Where's the button to skip this cutscene? All right, well, I'm trying to get to the story here.
Right. All right. So
Press X to stop
the
narc.
The final cutscene. So we've gone through the credits now, and now we get the reveal. We see that because if you've been watching it the first time, you don't even know now that the chief's not dead. Everybody on Earth thinks he's dead. The Arbiter isn't so sure.
No, and he heads back home with
that's
half
where
job.
I think the by the way, bringing it back to the to our fans, I think that's where you see Brian Morden. I think Brian Morden is in there somewhere. Among the heroes in the memorial.
Oh, on the
one doing the memorial salute, or is he actually in the photographs on the memorial?
In the photographs, I could swear, you know, that I think I see him in there, one of the pictures.
Supposedly he was in all three. He was the first audio in Halo 1. But
in Halo
also...
1, it was obvious.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure. I don't think anyone's ever pinned down where he shows up in the others.
Supposedly he was in Halo 2. Recall.
Yes. Yeah, but has anyone ever said exactly where?
I don't know.
I haven't seen it. We'll have to go look.
We'll have to check the wiki page.
Yeah.
But, go ahead.
I could swear that there's a picture there of him kind of, you know, in like military garb. I thought that was their, you know, handoff to him. So,
yeah.
That could be. We'll have to
But anyway, so you're saying with this cutscene,
for us,
the Arbiter gets to repeat his line.
Yeah.
The war was the beginning of the game.
Well, it certainly was better than go to war. You know, I mean, the
as far as one line.
It was certainly better than that. Yeah, in fact, I would love to get an answer to that question. Which line was cheesier between Johnson and Keyes? And personally, I would say Keyes was 10 times worse than Johnson's send me out with a bang, don't let her go moment. I really couldn't believe that that line actually got through. Where are we going? To war. I'm sorry. That was just like one of the worst lines in
history. Is the problem the writing or the delivery?
Both.
You know that. You know it's good that they cut it at that moment because someone else would have said like, "Excuse me, what did you say?"
Exactly. I'm sorry.
I'm waiting for some explicit orders, ma'am.
Yeah, exactly. I'm waiting for a guy who goes to war. Is that on the second floor? You know, I mean, yeah. I just,
right.
I just didn't like that. But anyway, but as far as this cutscene goes, yeah, the ending where the Arbiter they head home. You see this really monumental, awesome moment. With and it probably I would guess would be one of Narc's favorite moments where you see Halfjaw with his arms folded up in his super white armor, looking like
that's a great
the stormtrooper from hell.
That's a great scene. Because first of all, there's not enough Halfjaw in this game. There's not enough Halfjaw. You can never have enough Halfjaw.
I think he's not going to be an ODST either.
There are no elites. Well, no, actually, the internet has already come to the conclusion, right? I mean. People said, "Oh, maybe we're gonna fight elites." And Betty said, "Come out," said, "You do not fight elites." And then said, "Ah, but they didn't say there's no friendly elites."
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the internet for you.
But as far as this one goes, yeah, they finally take off, and the Arbiter, you see him, you know, sitting in the chair and say, "Take us home," and they take off.
Things look different without the Prophet's lies clouding my vision. I would like to see our own world, to know that it is safe.
Fear not. For we have made it so.
By your word, Arbiter.
Take us home.
But then...
Take us home, Jeeves.
Yep, and then you get the monumentally lovely long credit sequence that's unskippable. And then you get the bonus scene where you hear that telltale Cortana moment, which is, "Chief, can you hear me?" You know, that same homage to the first one where she's waking him up from the pod crash in Halo 1.
And the second, too, because there's the pod crash and then there's the Pelican crash at the beginning of Halo 2.
Such a treat, though. I remember the first time I saw it, I was like, oh, there's a little more.
And again, the lines that were delivered almost as comic relief here get delivered seriously.
Yes.
She's joking about it. She's like, "Hey, should I start CPR here? What's the deal here?" And here, of course, she's showing genuine concern.
I was kind of half expecting to hear that little tapping sound on the glass, you know, that tink, 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 "Chief, can you hear me?" You know?
"Chief, can you hear me? I thought I'd lost you, too."
"Hey, are you awake in there?" You know, it was really really kind of funny. But yeah, you see the chief floating around in zero G through the dawn, or what's left of it, where you get a chance to see that the ship has been cut in half, supposedly by this mess up with the particular portal that they were going through. And as he's perusing around in the very sparse lighting, you see or get a chance to hear Cortana explain exactly what happened to them.
And of course, he picks up an AR.
Well, he has to in every cutscene. It's in his contract, I think.
Yeah, and I'm sure they did that intentionally. Maybe I don't think there's any reason, technical reason in the Halo 3 engine for him to have an AR in every cutscene.
Well, what's to say that, I mean, a la the Alien, what's to say that in that on that ship that there's not a little smidgen of
a blood spore? Yeah, you know, there's no way to tell, really.
No, nothing. I think, well, again, put it this way. I would say that there are a lot of works that treat their music deceptively. There are a lot of, say, horror films that try to trick you by playing peaceful music when there's really a threat, and then at the last moment they reveal that threat. Halo, the whole series, I think, has been very honest and straightforward, matching the music to the mood. So the music here is telling you that it really is over, that everything is okay, and there's no reason for us to distrust the music. We might distrust the characters, we might distrust the player's perception of the situation. The characters might not be completely honest or completely forthcoming, but the music here is telling you. And again, for all those fans who doubted, right? The chief says it's finished, and Cortana agrees it's finished, and the music says it's finished.
Yep.
And, I don't think we don't know what Microsoft is going to do. We I hardly think that they gave Bungie its independence to get this franchise to make Halo Wars. I don't think that investment, I mean, it may be a good game and it may turn out to be popular, but I don't think it's going to pay back that investment for them.
This is the same company that came out with the Zune. So I really don't, whatever they, nothing will surprise me. You know, if they try one or two and then some accountant says, you know, it's just not worth it, we squeeze everything out of it, let's go on to whatever's next, you know? It would be, wouldn't it be such a nice breath of fresh air or intelligence, what do we say, if they actually looked at it and said, you know what, we don't have anybody in-house here who can do this game justice, whatever game it is, which they decide, and they decide to tuck it away, and... what a nice way to end.
I agree, but I don't see it. But again, without knowing the financial details, it's really hard to say. Since we don't know who paid what for what and what changed hands, right. Really. I still think Microsoft gave up a lot, and what they got was the franchise. And if they don't do anything with it, then they don't gain any advantage. Well, anyway.
Well, what they got really was like 4 years or whatever amount of years of a viable Xbox console.
But they, really, but they already got that, and they had.
But that's
Bungie.
What I mean is like to by keeping them happy and doing what they said, you know. I don't know. I guess I'm being way too rational, but it's like, you know, that's. I mean, they should be so thankful, you know, for what they got. So.
No, right, but they owned the goose that laid the golden eggs, and they set it free. And what they got was one of the eggs. So it would be surprising if they didn't try to make an omelet out of it. Mm. Okay, anyway, so this final scene again. So they say it's finished, and again, because the chief only has his body to emote with, we do get, you know, Cortana gets to look at him. He puts the rifle back in the rack, which I think is also a great moment. I mean, they're really trying to hit you over the head. If you weren't sure, look, it's over. We've never seen the chief put a weapon away.
All right.
And now we get him put into the cryo sleep chamber. So we're ending the whole series just the way we began it. You know, he came out of the thing and now he's going back in. And people point to these last bits of dialogue. They point to the "wake me when you need me." I never seen that as like, okay, wake me for the next game.
Right.
We don't get that at the end of the other games.
No, that's a statement
about his character. It's not a attractions.
This is what to me makes it so satisfying, because he's not just talking to Cortana, he's also talking to us.
Yes, of course.
He's like, you're going to wake me when it's appropriate. And, you know, need me means not for some stupid shooter
exactly.
or some stupid shooter, but when it's something that's going to be worth me coming out of sleep. That's like Bungie saying he's going to come out when it's time, when the time is right. And that I thought was a very nice, clever acknowledging us.
Yeah, which may or may not come. And you also get, and again, also what I wanted to mention before about the way they frame scenes with the Chief and Cortana in it. We did have a kind of a close-up, like a three-quarter shot there on Cortana, which I think also reveals a little bit of the weakness in her face. Her face changes so much between the three games.
Right.
It's hard to keep her straight as an idea in your head. But when they pull back and do the wide shots and you see her silhouette, that's when you know that that's Cortana, when you get to see the Chief lying in the chamber and she is on the little pedestal there and her body language there. I mean, it takes up a really tiny portion of the screen, but her body language there, her head is down, her arms are folded
like
one into the other, and it's an entirely different posture than what you see out of her in Halo 2 and Halo 1, this kind of cocky, self-assured, you know, I'm the Black Ops AI who's going to kick everybody's ass, and me and my super soldier type of thing. It's much more, you get this idea that she's been humbled by this whole experience, and that part of that has changed, that's part of the cause of her change in attitude towards the Chief, that it's no longer this cop buddy comedy thing, you know, let's kill some guys and issue a couple of one-liners, that it's much more serious than that, and that she takes this next duty, which is watching over him as he sleeps, also very seriously, and being an AI, she's in a perfect position to do that.
Right. And then of course comes the planet.
Right, okay, so now we've got the Legendary Edition, which is what everybody talks about, thinking that there's definitely going to be another game. So we see the fragment of the Dawn drift into the frame over what looks like a planet of some sort. There's not a lot of information there in that frame. Something that looks like it has cities on it. You can see these ring surfaces. It looks like the whole thing might be made of metal. The texture is very much like what's on the bottom of the Halo rings. There's not a lot of information in the games to tell you what that is or might be. People who've read the novels talk about, well, okay, it's a Sentinel place, it's a Sentinel factory, it's something like we saw in Ghosts of Onyx. The books talk about sword worlds and fortress worlds, a sword world being a Halo installation that is the weapon that kills the food of the Flood in order to stop its spread. But there are also these other things called shield worlds, which supposedly Onyx was, something that's comprised of the bodies of Sentinels and that is used as a temporary storage place for people while the Halos are being fired, something that protects them. Maybe it's something like that. I always thought it wasn't really all that important what it is. It, to me, that whole thing was just there to tell you that these two characters do go on and have other adventures after this. This is not the end for them, but the series that we see is a window into that world, and as such, its view is by nature limited, and it's supposed to be. The Haloverse is supposed to be this iceberg of which you only see a part, and the part that you don't see contributes to your understanding of the whole thing. But to reveal it all would lay the whole thing bare, and you'd be wondering, "Oh, is that it all? Oh, okay." You know, it would cheapen the whole thing.
Yeah, and it also helps that they throw in the standard marathon symbol too.
Let
us kind of percolate into what could be happening here. So,
yeah, but I always thought that was just thematic, you know, and of course the people go off, you know, half cocked and say, you know, well,
I don't mean any sort of callback to the actual game or marathon.
He's gone through a portal and he's dropped into the Haloverse.
Yeah, now he's going to become the security officer. No, I just mean that, you know, just that of all the things they could throw in, it's nice that they keep throwing little nuggets of info there that make you want to think, you know, just what is it that he's going to. You know, that I wouldn't mind if they were able to keep it going just in book form.
Really? Now, see, I think it's been a little bit uneven. I mean, the last one that was about Johnson by Staten, I was actually quite impressed by. I liked it.
I don't know. I feel like it would be less, it wouldn't offend me as much if they got it wrong. Because then I just like with the existing the Halo books, I'd say, well, this book just doesn't really do it for me, but these two other ones do. So
the one that Nylon did to fill in between Halo 2 and 3, I didn't enjoy quite as much. That's First Strike. Part of it, just because a lot of it is technical time travel mumbo jumbo that seemed like his entire task in doing this was figuring out how do I have the Master Chief have an epic adventure between two set plot points, which are too close together for you to be able to travel and have an epic adventure. How do you make up an epic adventure that it doesn't ever matter if the player never sees it? And so it's kind of superfluous from the start. None of those events have much significance. And what bugs me about it is that the way they did those novels, bringing in the other Spartans, I know that a lot of people who wanted to see those stories, but for every one of the people who were satisfied to see those stories in the books, there are people who say that, see, this means that the next game is going to have other playable Spartans, which of course they never did. And if Bungie never does another Halo game, they won't. Who knows? Maybe Microsoft will. Let's wrap this
Narcogen
up.
Narcogen monologue.
We'll wrap this up with the anger, sadness, and envy. In this case, just pick one thing about that level and say whether it made you angry or sad.
I will pick angry for those ridiculous little standalone missile or whatever laser pods.
The
deployable turrets. Yeah. That are, when you do use them, when you do deploy them, they're easily killed.
Yeah,
they don't last very long. But if they happen to survive, and then you make it in,
they turn on you.
When you leave, they then turn on you. So I don't, no idea why it was put there. Didn't seem to be given a lot of thought as to how they could be used viably.
Oh.
Unless someone has figured out a way where, you know, I mean, I could imagine grabbing one and throwing it over the side and letting it kind of to deploy somewhere down there,
or specify
back, it's not going to be
specify targets somehow and say, actually, hey, stop shooting me.
When that actually first happened to me, and because I used it in the flood fight before the door opened, and I had one, there were two of them, and I had one on either side of the door, and they both survived. And then when I came out, they killed me, and they killed me so quickly I didn't see where it had come from. I had to watch the film. But the funny thing was, that didn't anger me at all. In fact, I thought it was great. I actually laughed and said, oh, that's awesome. Because if you look at those and look at that as being a Forerunner object, then it makes sense, right? After you've killed Spark, yeah, the Sentinels are attacking you, so these things also would attack you. And so you can use them by deploying them for the fight and then destroying them yourself before you go in the door.
I had no problem following along the story logic. It was just more that when I did want them to actually work,
right,
they didn't seem to last very long against the actual flood. So
yeah, like, it's a little personal because this is something you activate personally. This is something you think is going to be helping you.
Yeah, the only thing that I did is that there actually are a couple of those little ledges, and if you jump up on top of air and jump up in the air and deploy it,
and deploy them there.
They're a little bit higher up, and that way, because what happens actually is the flood just, like, the tanks just walk up to it and melee it and destroy it in one hit. But if you get them high up, they can't reach.
Interesting. Yeah.
So that actually works a little bit better.
Okay, sadness, Mig. What made you sad?
Oh, no. We're picking one item.
No,
each
now
and
we go
say,
to each
one?
Of us.
So,
yeah.
So oh. I will.
Somebody
I will
pick
say,
an envy.
And I'll be a little bit corny here. That cutscene with Hood where they do. They do the gun salute for the chief, and then
it was for everybody. It wasn't just for him.
But as far as the player,
it was for all of the fallen. But did you read the monument?
As far as the player is concerned, it's for the chief, because the player has no connection to these other soldiers. And knowing the way most Halo players are, the player probably killed quite a few of those.
I was disappointed there wasn't a picture of Guilty Spark there. who else hung around for 100,000 years? I'm sorry, he gave his all.
But they've been talking for years in the gaming press about whether or not a game can connect to an audience emotionally the way a film does, or the way a piece of music does, or the way other dramatic forms, books or plays do.
Or a poem.
And I could admit, I get a little choked up every time I see that thing, because even for a character who is as reticent as the chief is, I thought the game achieved making a connection from him. I find it amazing because it works, even though we know he's not dead. but we sympathize with them because they're sad because they think he's dead. Right. And I'm saying sad that not in a way that it may be sad that the game does this about a feature or a bug or something like that. The game achieved to make me sad, and I'm continually impressed by that. And again, you got to give props to Marty for that, because without his music,
Marty
would not work at all.
Although the only thing that I would add to that is that what I always found kind of comical is that that's where you see the gun, the salute, and these guns that up until this time you had been using and abusing, and now they're like, they sounded like firecrackers. whereas usually when a 21 gun salute is supposed to be this echoey, this big thunderous clap of of sound, and here they didn't kind of carry that sort of, I guess maybe that's how it is realistically. Like if you ever did actually attend a military,
I don't know,
burial or something. But
well, depending on the weapons,
kind of funny how.
Yeah, sometimes they use M1 Grand, sometimes they use M16s or M4s.
Yeah, but who actually knows what
they sound like?
What a BR really sounds like.
Fire up a BR, yes, but I mean you could fire up any YouTube. And actually hear what the real weapons sound like to a real microphone. Okay. So
all right, so you, Blackstar, pick one thing
that was envious, or
no, pick one thing and you pick which one of the three things. Whether it was pick something that want to talk about, whether it's something that made you angry,
either
angry, sad,
or would be here too long. Sadness, I don't know. See, as far as the emotional level, I have to say that the very final scene with the whole memorial and everything else, it just seemed. To me, anyway, it just seemed a little forced. It seemed a little soon. There wasn't enough of an emotional, either range or an ebb and flow from what you just saw to where you were at. And they seemed kind of rushed because they had so much to tell you. They had to show the Arby arrive. They had to show Arby get out. They had to show Arby come over to the group. Then they had to come up and set up the thing. And they kind of mushed it all together. It seemed a little forced, like there was too much information going on from the time you escape to the time they had to bring you to the memorial to make everyone think that the chief was gone. And I wish there was a little bit more of a cutscene or a little bit more of a section, or maybe a slow, dare I say, a montage, maybe some dramatic black, something to give you a sense of time.
It is a montage.
Covering different things, something before you get to the memorial, something to set you up for it.
The Arbiter getting up and having breakfast.
Hey, a debriefing, a scene where they try to find any remnants that they can't. Of the ship or anything else that they can't.
I don't think
some consolidation.
How about actual citizens?
There you go. Earth? Yeah, or seeing something in Mombasa. When I don't know, just another element there before you get there, to as either a setup or to let you say, okay, whew, we escaped, everything's great. Let's take a breather. Then we got to get dressed to a memorial service.
I suppose
what?
It would have been neat if we could have had
it
a hard hat
much.
Worker from. From what was it? Not Crow's Nest.
They could have done it a lot of ways. They could have done it visually. Yeah. They could have done it graphically. They could have done it, with some different character actions or ships leaving or arriving. There's lots of things that they could have done. I just wish there was. It didn't have to be huge,
but there are plenty.
Just a little more.
There are plenty of cutscenes that are not necessarily as big or epic as you would like them to be, or that the story would seem to deserve. I mean, if we talked about the portion of the cutscene of the Ark where Johnson and the Arbiter are going through collecting the weapons, and the fact that there's supposed to be a big space, a hangar space,
right.
And there's no echo, that it makes it all feel small. There are not that many scenes with large numbers of characters. And so you're right. It's a memorial service. You're right. You don't see every normal thing that happens between the return of the ship to Earth and the service. There's nobody extraneous at the service. There's minimum complement of soldiers.
Very minimum.
Hood
I was really
and
surprised
the Arbiter and nobody else. I guess everybody else is dead.
How
they're going to repopulate the species, I don't know.
Who's memorializing them then?
Maybe that's
Hood,
where they're
going to get started.
Yeah,
we got Hood, we got Arby, we got the seven guys, and who else? There's nobody else there.
I know, but civilians don't.
I thought that might have to be about how Earth is decimated, and that they don't
maybe.
Have the time. Communications maybe are down. Who knows? Like
they had time
like
to get
of,
in their dress uniforms though.
Hey, personally, what I would love to have seen, they could have had like ship's complement from. the Shadow of Intent. They could have had ship's complement or people left over from Crow's Nest, the Marines that took that hadn't left. There could have been a lot of different. They could have had ships and tanks and weapons all crowding around this very decimated section where Hood says this place will remain barren. Well, who's he telling right. that to? There's nobody there to hear it. So it just lacked.
See, I envision that scene in my head, and it just looks cluttered. I'd be like, "Why is all this crap in here?"
No, I have this in my head. I wish there was a wide shot of everyone around seeing it. You know that end scene in Dune where you see 4 billion people all sitting outside.
Okay,
this. But I wanted that.
Okay, but you
call
gotta,
me crazy.
You got to admit, every time they've tried a scene like that, it hasn't really worked.
Hey, they could have done it with a matte painting and a couple of characters.
You look at the way they tried to do this massive scene with the big audience in Halo 2, and it doesn't really work.
I don't think their execution in that worked. I think they could have pulled it off here. And to be honest, because this was the end, I think it deserved it. I think it deserved a little bit more.
I don't know.
Epic
I think they,
right
they kept it tight. There's really very little role for civilian humans to play.
I think
in
you
the
just
story.
Killed all the characters. They didn't have any other characters to put there.
Well, that may true too. But you're right. They still could have put Half-Jaw there, or you know, other elites.
Hey, they could have had the Shadow of Intent land or slightly hover there, where they get to go up the gravity lift after they walk off the scene from being there. Half-Jaw could have been there too.
Get in late, get out early though. What's there is the minimum necessary to get the idea across to you. And I can't
right,
really.
But the thing is, this is supposed to be a military thing, a planetary thing, an impromptu type thing. I mean, is this supposed to be the whole planetary memorial for the epic loss of every single colony that we've had around the world, and we're only having 8 people there? 9 people? I don't know. It just seemed like there wasn't enough. So that is my anger, sadness, and or envy. I guess that you would put all together.
Look,
it's not one.
It's not an inauguration, you know. I mean,
no,
you don't have to have a million people there.
But it is the the end game of this game, and I think that they should have had more.
I don't know. I find it.
I don't mean to.
I find it difficult to fault it.
To kill the party, but I have to get that.
Yeah, we should be wrapping up. So
that's okay.
This edition wraps up our level by level coverage of Halo 3. There are, of course, other topics. We're going to eventually talk about
Microsoft's business model.
About Bungie's independence. About its
Bungie,
AI.
Bungie wannabe.
Yeah. About ODST and about Halo Wars. So
executive
tuned.
Wagon hitching.
So thanks for listening.
People riding Bungie's coattails.
There you go. I like that one. Yeah. So you too can make a Halo game in 30 easy lessons. How to copy and paste. And and other new and interesting things, how to sound like Marty with your Yamaha keyboard. So please tune in next time for that, and hopefully we'll catch you next time.
Thanks for listening, and watch rampancy.net for future episodes of Anger, Sadness, and Envy.
And we're clear.
Okay,
okay. Ready, Meg? You ready to stop? In 3, 2, 1, stop.